This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Run with Chong Jensen and I'm Wong Xiaoning. It is 8:37 Thursday, the 1st of December. But before that, let's talk about cabinet appointments. Because for the first time in Malaysia's history, we experienced a hung parliament, which meant that no coalition or party had enough numbers to form a government. Eventually, Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim was asked to form one, which currently consists of 19 political parties and some independent MPs. With that, he now faces a tricky predicament on how to distribute the key posts in his cabinet that ensures stability of his administration while also upholding his own pledges of a clean government and a break from corruption.
Meanwhile, keeping his promise of a slimmer cabinet, with speculation that a cabinet may be announced as soon as Friday, who will Anwar appoint to key ministries and will it be technocrats or politicians? And with country facing many structural issues that require holistic solutions, what are the qualifications and characteristics of these men and women that will be part of the cabinet that will help propel Malaysia to the next level?
For more on this, we have on the line with us Dato' Dr. Rais Hussein, Chief Executive Officer of MA Research. Good morning, Rais. Now, let's start with the overall cabinet appointments, given that Anwar now sits at the head of this coalition government composing of many different factions. How tricky will it be for him to distribute the key post?
Well, good morning to everyone. Obviously, it's going to be a little challenging, but nothing is not impossible. I think it's going to be a little bit challenging trying to accommodate all of them in a grand coalition. Remember, this is not a unity government. It's a grand coalition government, coalition of the willing. And they need to accommodate all the political parties. So it is going to be challenging, but it is not something not doable, given the fact that it is very critical to have a working, hitting the ground running type of cabinet ministers from day one.
And Dr. Rais, will he be able to downsize the cabinet given the various concessions that he will have to make? How can that be achieved? Will he have to merge ministries or abolish deputy ministers?
I think we have seen overzealous political of accommodation the last time around with 70, 71 ministers, deputy ministers. Then you have, in addition to that, advisors, special envoys and all that. I think that would not happen this time around. We have, like, for instance, parliamentary examples. Like in India, for instance, you have 15% of the sitting parliamentarian to be able to be appointed as the ministers. Now, they have about 1.4 billion people. Now, Malaysia, we have 33 million people. So I'm sure the number will be more reflective. Obviously, there will be some right sizing. I believe in the circle of 50, 25 cabinet ministers and 25 deputy ministers. And as I said, the right sizing part is very critical and important because that is one of the promises that he has made during the prior to the election.
Okay, when it comes to ministries with large budgets like that of the finance, health and education, do you think technocrats are the way to go to hit the ministry or are politicians still more suitable?
I think we've had some technocrat experience. Well, he says he's a technocrat, not in politics and so on. And later on, we found out that he is actually a political party member from day one, even before he was appointed as a finance minister. And the result is not somehow something so very different from any other politician. My view is that get someone who has the skill, knowledge and abilities, and above all, integrity. And if you have that four combination, then you have to hit the right person to helm such important portfolios. Because remember, next year, 2023, one-third of the global economy is going to be in deep recession. And if Malaysia is included, now if we do not have the right type of people to lead important and critical ministries, then we will have a big problem. So it is hoped, and I'm confident that Dato' Sri Anwar will get the right people, right competent people with the right passion to be able to see us through this difficult time, not only post-pandemic and in the endemic situation, but the deep global recession that is coming in 2023.
Which then begs the question, what kind of criteria are we going to impose to ensure that the right type of person is assigned to the right ministry? How transparent should we be in that selection process?
We have to be radically transparent because we cannot be doing the same thing over and over again and then expecting the results somewhat to be different. We have seen leakages and corruption has become a norm these days. With some estimates have come out with figures almost 3 trillion ringgit lost in the last 25 years due to corruption and leakages. We are losing 24 to 26 billion ringgit a year through leakages. I think this is a very serious issue. So I'll go back to the criteria that I've just set just now. It must be the right skill, knowledge, abilities, and integrity. We do not want ministers just to read speeches during official functions and do not understand what he's reading. So we need ministers who knows his staff well. So for instance, in the communication and multimedia, he must understand the digital economy space well. He must understand the communication space well. We cannot have somebody who just goes there, reads speeches, thank God there's no more cutting of ribbons, but and then he goes back. We cannot afford to have that anymore. Look at some of the examples in some countries like the Scandinavian countries, like New Zealand, like even Singapore. They go through a very tough process in selecting and determining who is going to be the ministers. I hope, maybe not immediately this particular cabinet, but going forward, Malaysia needs to adopt to ensure bring in the right set of people to be able to be in the cabinet ministers. If you do not have them as an MP, appoint some them through some senatorship, but get the right people. Because things are going to be very tough next year, as it already is now. And if we do not have the right people, then we will have a big problem.
And Dr. Rice, UMNO has responded to calls against appointments of politicians that are still facing corruption charges, saying that they are innocent until proven guilty. Should UMNO just stay clear of having politicians with court cases in his cabinet?
My personal view is that obviously those who have court cases, they should not be in the lineup. Why? Because let them clear the name first, and then later on the appointments can be made. It is not as critical and as urgent as to appoint them and then to face a barrage of criticism. And anyway, there was communication that those who are facing court cases need to clear their names first. Mm-hmm. That's my own personal view. But again, when you want to form a coalition of the willing, where you need everyone's support, you have some kind of accommodation. But I hope sanity will prevail. We hope that those who are facing court cases are magnanimous enough to understand that we need to start clean from day one, i.e. From the time set go, there should be a reflection of clean government. And be that as may, yes, innocent until proven guilty, so long you are facing the case, court case, you should be magnanimous enough to say that, okay, I will wait until such time that I'm proven innocent.
I have one last question in the 1 or 2 minutes that we have left. I'm curious to think about, to know your thoughts about KPIs. How important is it to have KPIs that the public know about and also a culture of actually resignation when you fail among ministers?
It's very critical. Why? Because if you look at the countries that are doing well, New Zealand, the social welfare scheme or system, that necessitates the ministers to have specific KPIs. And these KPIs must be independent. It cannot be sent back with certain things that you can easily achieve and then you gloat over it. I think the model of input, output, outcome, impact model should be adopted, i.e. every ringgit spent in the budget or in the ministry must have the desired outcome and impact to the people, to the society, to the community, to the nation, not to the politician, not to the his private secretary, not to his political party. I think if you start the culture of this, then we are in the right pathway or waypoints to recovery. Again, I'd like to remind everyone, myself included, that next year is going to be a tough year. This is already December. I know I must be wishing a Merry Christmas and so on, but please understand, January onwards is going to be a very, very tough year. One-third of the global economy are going to be in deep recession. And it's not such a good news, and given our already inflationary pressures, unemployment, and all the other things, the baggage that comes with it.
Yeah.
So it is so critical that they have a KPI, a not send back KPI, the KPI that is transparent, and preferably put that in your ministerial web pages, apart from just the photo of the ministers. Put there, this is what I need to do, this is the time frame, and this is something that is smart, specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time-bound.
Okay.
Otherwise, we will have a problem.
All right. Thank you very much for your time. That was Dr. Rice Hussain, Chief Executive Officer of Emir Research, telling us that we should maybe incorporate what corporates do when it comes to KPIs for ministers. Be transparent about it, publish it in the ministry websites and hold them accountable. I would also like to see ministers in the future, you know, being willing to resign when they fail or when there's a scandal or when something goes wrong and say, yes, it was my fault. I will acknowledge it and I will step down and make way for the better person. We seldom ever see this in Malaysia.
Yeah, I think what really resonated with me was when he said we really need the person with the right skill sets for the right job. And I think we have seen in some appointments in GLCs, they actually parachute people with no practical industry experience, but really with just a broad finance experience, expecting them to run a company.
So we don't apply, unfortunately.
I don't think we have that experience.
And what more for a minister, right? Those for qualifications, the experience really is critical. Up next, we'll be diving into corporate results of Public Bank, CIMB and AMB. Stay tuned for that BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.